Hello and welcome to the August 17th edition of Kaechung Radio's The Talking Show. My name is Steve Cato, and I am here in the Kaechung Radio studio surrounded by fans with none other than Nicholas Miller.
Hey Steve, great to see you. It's warm in here.
It's warm. It's the top floor.
These fans aren't helping the situation.
And neither are all of these fans who are here. Am I right? Am I right, everyone? That's right.
Warm bodies. It's actually just ceiling fans and desk fans. The kind of fans that people want.
Wait, what are you saying about all these people who are here, Nicholas? Come on, don't speak ill of our audience here. You guys look great. Great crowd. That's right.
Yeah. Keep on buzzing. And stay a flutter of it.
And fans. But there are also lots of... We got box fans on people here. We don't want people to pass out while they're in the studio audience.
Definitely not.
How have you been? How's your week been?
Pretty good. Yeah, I'm recovering from a knee injury that's almost back to normal, and that makes me very happy. Optimistic, I'd say.
How long have you been out?
8 weeks.
So tell me this, because I have this question about my own body.
Okay.
When it's been something like 2 months, 8 weeks, that you've been injured somehow, how do you remember the internal feeling of normal? Because you were something else, you were another way before, but it's been a long time.
Yeah.
And the suffering's gotten less acute, maybe.
Yeah, pain is pretty obvious.
Yeah.
And the pain's gone away.
You're not just used to it.
I don't think so. And it went away in phases. You know, it was kind of a general always pain to like a pain when I move in certain directions.
Right.
To no pain when I move in whatever direction I want.
Okay. So that's pretty convincing.
Yeah. That's convincing.
Because I always, you know, like sometimes I'll have like, I've been thinking this about like, you know, do I have long COVID? and I'm like, am I experiencing brain fog? Because sometimes I feel pretty stupid.
Yeah.
And pretty separated, you know, disconnected from what's, like, right in front of me. Like, you know, I have this idea that one's brain could just feel like an active sort of hand or something that reaches out and just grabs things it's supposed to think about. And I haven't felt that way in a while. But then I'm like, have I ever felt that way? Like, do I have an... You know, it's like a body dysmorphia kind of situation, but for brains. You know, where you feel like you should be thinner, but you've never been thin. Or, you know, right? Like, you have an idea that other people's brains work this way, that one's brain should work this way. But I can't really think about... I can't really remember what that feeling felt like, to have my brain work that way. And then other times I'm like, maybe I'm the same. Maybe I'm the same as I've always been. I don't know. It's harder because there's no pain. It's just more about sort of like being in a different state or something like that. Anyway, something I've been thinking about a lot.
Sure. I have not noticed you to be any more foggy than you have in the last decade of our friendship.
That's good.
But I've also gotten foggier, and I've never tested positive for COVID, so I can't really blame COVID.
How much can you remember of the last decade of our friendship? Maybe that's the other thing too. Like how far back would you say like the visceral memory? Because it's like obviously we remember being friends for over 10 years. We remember doing this radio show for over 10 years.
Wow.
Right? That's right, everyone. That's right.
Yeah.
Thank you. It's got a long time.
That fan is clearly high.
A long time fan over there. A really good fan over there. But you know, I feel like there are some people, like maybe previous guest Christian Oldham, who I feel remembers every encounter I've had with them.
Yeah, I mean,
and no offense, but I don't think I can.
The two people... I say there are three people in my life who seem to remember almost everything.
Yeah.
Two of them had never drank alcohol. Actually, all three of them. Really.
Like, never, ever.
Well, Ella remembers pretty much everything, and she drank when I first met her, but not...
Just, like, a little.
Yeah, yeah. Like, she'd have one or two beers and have a really negative effect on her.
Not, like, a committed...
No. And, yeah, I think that alcohol has a profound effect on memory. Since I stopped drinking, like, you know...
Do you remember everything now?
No, but it's a little clearer. I think memories I've formed since then are a touch clearer.
I wonder if this is an option for me or whether I've gone past the point of no return.
It's like the Simpsons episode where there's the single brain cell left.
Yeah, and it's just like,
hey, it's dark in here.
Do you know that meme where it says, like, it shows, like, a skull, cross-section of a skull with a full of a brain and a hammer hitting the skull, and it says, like, big brain, no good, gets hurt, damaged or whatever, and then has a same cross section but with a small brain inside, and it says small brain, good, can dodge.
That's it's true.
With the hammer striking the skull. Well, that's what I'm counting on, folks.
Yeah. Maybe there's another side to it though. You break through the brain fog into perfect clarity.
Oh. Or maybe it's just a gauzy impressionistic.
That's my hope, because I mean, on the day to day, there are so few things I want to remember. Like, you know, reading the news headlines this morning, I don't want to remember any of that. That was,
yeah, right.
Mostly bad stuff. Most text exchanges I have, most email correspondences, I just prefer to never remember.
And all of that is flagrantly searchable. Unfortunately, that's the other thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, like all of that is stuff that you can like. 1,000% like return to.
And I've gotten better at like bringing a camera on like a, you know, like a family trip or something.
Yeah.
And then it's like, okay, this tool is great for
remembering
this stuff. Yeah. Or at least jogging my memory.
Yeah. It's important to remember to take more photographs. When I was in the immigration system, it was an important part of it. You have to take pictures of you and your partner doing stuff. And so you just remind yourself to like, you know, you're enjoying yourself doing something. You're like, let's take a picture of ourselves doing this. And, I think both Meredith and I, that's not really how we do it in general. You know, we're not, like, documenting our lives for others.
Sure.
And I don't think we are, like, we are really compelling subjects for photographs. But then, you know, at the end of the day, it is actually quite worth it. Like, one does... you know, you look back on all the pictures you're sending to the Department of Homeland Security and you think, like, wow, gosh, well, we had such a nice time. You know, it's like...
That was lovely. Yeah,
yeah, what a great relationship. So, you know, it's nice to be reminded of it, especially in a moment where you are, like, interacting with the brutality that is the immigration system. So I feel like that was, like, a really nice thing we could do for ourselves. So I'm all for it. I have to remember to take more pictures. I feel like it's I never regret it when I do, you know?
Yeah.
And when you're with people who are in the habit of doing it, like photographers, actually, like Ian James or something, that's always like pulling out a point and shoot.
Yeah.
Or my friend Sarah, you know, like I played a concert with the Los Angeles Woodwind Skillshare couple months ago. That's nice that someone took pictures, you know? And that they were pictures that exist outside of Instagram or whatever as well. They're picture pictures.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's important to it's important to think about what you're doing, I guess, and have a means of reflecting back on it. I suppose it's also what journaling is for.
Yeah.
But who has time to read all that?
I know so few people who do that. Well, you know, one good thing about a poor memory is that one can really turn their gaze towards the future.
That's true. And live in the ecstasy of the present.
Yeah.
Which is something I think I've always been very good at.
Yeah. And build a good sense of preparedness.
Right. Yeah. I mean... it's good to take pictures of stuff because you can remember, see how things have changed.
Yeah, yeah. And see what needs to be done to, say, fortify one's home for the future.
Yes. Well, with that in mind, and given the great response we had to our episode with Martin Risa, they loved. Yeah, he was a great guest. But then also, our last you'll have to remind me of our last week's guest's name.
Rule. That's all I remember. Rule. Dr. Rule.
Dr. Rule. When Dr. Rule's rules of medieval and historical warfare taught us a lot about ditches, I thought we would combine those two interests, water and ditches, and all the way, we sent the Kaechang Radio remote bus out to Arizona. So pretty far for Kaechang, frankly, to the property of Brad Lancaster. So here we are on location with Brad Lancaster.
Hey, I'm Brad Lancaster. It's raining, and I want to show you some water harvesting in action. Okay? Boom! First thing we got here. Neighborhood street. It's raised or crowned in the middle. Water drains to the curb on either side, flows along the curb, and we have cut the curb to allow the street runoff to go into a sunken mulch basin, which is lower than the street, to passively and freely irrigate this native food-producing velvet mesquite tree and others, like desert ironwood. The great thing here is these trees then grow to shade and cool the street from which the water comes, while controlling neighborhood flooding downstream. Love it! Okay, there's more of that going on here, but that's for a different video. Right now, I want to take you into the house, and here we are at the gate. And as you can see, we got a lot of sweet on-site harvesting strategies going on here. And they're all integrated to make them more efficient and juicier. So let's look at a few of those. Here, when we walk down the path towards the structure there, all this water from the path drains into the sunken mulch basin to passively and freely irrigate that citrus tree, turning rain into fruit. And this section of roof from the main house goes down this white downspout, underground, behind the sapote tree, and up into the gutter of the porch of the garage. A one-car garage turned cottage. Nice. Let's take a closer look. Okay. So, we have this covered porch, and we've created this dry-stacked retaining wall, which holds and supports a raised planting area with a white sapote fruit tree, tasty organic greens, and wild chili plant. And we've incorporated a bunch of benches, stairs into it, so it doubles as a little seating area. But I want to take you to the roof where this ladder leads. Okay, check out some juicy things there. This is an old salvaged playground ladder. Would have gone into the dump, but it was saved. It's being reused. So this porch was built to handle the weight of many people, so we can hang out here, use it as a terrace, check out the street scene, say hi to the neighbors. And when it is sunny weather, there are clouds. Sorry, right now, but when it is sunny weather, you can see the mountain view from here. All right, but let's turn back around, and we have this section of roof goes into that gutter, comes down the downspout, and across the white roof, painted white so it reflects the summer heat, and it's a non-toxic elastomeric paint by the Safe Coat Company. That water then goes down the gutter and into these two 1,000-gallon rainwater tanks. And this other section of roof, the longer section, goes into that gutter and also drains in to those 2,000-gallon tanks. No pumps, no moving parts, all simple gravity. Love it! Okay, and here's a thing that maybe is not so common. This section of roof over here goes into that gutter, drains into that white downspout pipe we looked at earlier, comes underground, and then up this brown pipe and into the gutter. Okay? And it's only drizzling now, so we don't see a lot of water, but right there, water's dripping on through. That water came from that roof. And the way it works is that whole pipe fills with water. And once it's filled, because that inlet point is a little bit higher than this outlet point, where the water overflows is here. And then it moves via gravity down into those two tanks. Love that! All right, so let's now go back down, and I want to show you some ways that we passively and freely filter our water. Okay, so the water comes down the gutter, hits this rainhead screen. So the screen is at an angle, so the debris is cast off. And all the water goes down into a first flush pipe. Let's get a different vantage point of that. So if we come back here, okay, there's the rainhead screen. And when we get the first flush of water coming off the roof, the dirty flush of water that's got the bird poop and dust that's accumulated on the roof since the last rain, that all fills this section of pipe. And there's a screw cap end on there so the water doesn't drain out. So the dirty water fills up that section of pipe, and then the clean water that follows it goes directly into the tank. All right? Now, key thing about this system, well, first, you gotta have that screw cap. So you can come here, I can unscrew this, and then I can let the bird poop, fertile water, naturally fertilize my grapevine. Nice! And irrigate it. But this grapevine then will grow over this whole trellis in the summer months to shade and cool the cistern water. Very nice. But I want you to see this first flush pipe in context. There is the main door to the garage. Okay? This is the main hangout spot. So this first flush is super conveniently located. So we see it every time we come in and out of the structure. So we remember to come and unscrew it, drain it before the next rain. Otherwise, it wouldn't work. It wouldn't grab the first flush of water in the next rain. Okay? And at the same time, by doing that, we're able to irrigate the food-producing grapevine so we get more grapes, more shade. All right. And then we're still using free simple strategies like gravity to take the overflow water from this tank, goes behind the fence. We're keeping the overflow pipe high, so again, using gravity, we're able to distribute it to this raised planting bed. So we got a super sweet slow it, spread it, sink it action going there. Water comes from that roof, goes down, goes up there, goes into there, fills up, overflows, goes back, and infiltrates there. No water wasted. So here's the overflow point. And our tanks are currently full, meaning maybe I gotta get some more tanks, okay? But we're still not losing that water. It's being infiltrated into the soil here, okay, for free. And the soil is our largest and least expensive tank, so way cheaper than a tank to do it this way. And this water is then totally saturated this part of the bed in these rains, and it is flushed and leached the salts out of the basin that periodically receives gray water from our laundry shack. Let's take a closer look at that. Okay. All right. The laundry shack. Okay, but let's go into this solar-powered laundromat. Here we have the washing machine. We only allow people to use no-sodium soaps. That way we don't kill our soil by using the wrong soap. Instead, we keep things good and healthy. And here, next to the washing machine, we have four drain pipes that go to the landscape. Each pipe is labeled with the tree that gets its water. Okay? And every time we do a load of wash, we take the drain hose out of the pipe that was used in the last load, and we move it to the next pipe. So every load of wash sends its water to a different fruit tree. So we distribute the gray water around. Nice! All right, and let's put it in the white sapote for now, just so you can see water goes down that pipe, and then out here, along here, and daylights above the mulch in this basin, so no roots can grow into that pipe, all right? And all the water goes beneath the surface of the mulch, so it meets the Arizona gray water guidelines, all right? Nobody can come in direct contact with standing water, because there is no standing water. All right, so we grow fruit with ours and our neighbor's dirty laundry. Love that. Okay, there's another thing going on here that I want to show you. So you remember this white downspout pipe, okay, which goes under the ground and back up to the garage porch? Well, this is a wet system called that because it's always got water in the pipe, okay? And right here is a T in that pipe. And it outlets here to another screw cap. So after the rain, we can flush water out of this wet system, and I will unscrew it there, and then all that fertile flush water fertilizes that citrus tree. Yes! All right. So, again, this first flush is located in a very convenient place. It is along the main path to the garage, okay? And it is also by the front door of the main house. So, it is very convenient, not a chore, to release the first flush water after a rain before the next one. And you got to be real careful with these systems in cold climates. Typically cannot do a wet system in a cold climate. Because if you've got water sitting in that pipe, when things freeze, you're going to crack that pipe. So if we have super cold weather, which is not that common here, I will open that up, let the water out, and then it will be dry in the freeze and no cracks, no problems. All right. Well, if you guys that are watching this are into any or all of this, then I gotta say, the books for you are these two sweet honeys. Rainwater Harvesting for Dry Lands and Beyond. Cannot recommend them enough. They're gonna tell you everything you wanna know about the water harvesting I just showed you, and also how to harvest the sun, harvest shade, local food, and a whole heck of a lot more. And if you wanna get still more information, check out my website, harvestingrainwater.com. Thanks for watching.
Wow.
Wow.
Love it.
Love it. Juicy.
Love it.
Juicy. Yeah.
Yeah. Honey.
Right in that mulch.
Honey mamas.
Mulch.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Wow. I am always, I feel like only in America do people with such relentless positivity thrive.
That's true.
When I lived in Denmark, I didn't know a single person like that. I didn't encounter one. There was one figure like that, but he was like, kind of like the Pee Wee Herman.
Okay.
And he was deliberately playing a part, I think, you know, was like an actor, was not.
Yeah, my recent trip to England would lead me to believe that
they don't have
they
those
killed
there
all of those in the 16th century.
I think
something.
They all moved them over here. That's what they did with them. But you know, to be fair, I think you and I have both been to Arizona.
I have.
And one of the things about built up Arizona that I've always felt was that it was just an unlivable and unsustainable environment.
It's true.
It's too hot. It's extremely dry. And everything seems to come at a cost. Like, there's no, you can have water for your lawn, but the water comes from the Colorado River, you know, a system of, mm-hmm. you know, like,
mm-hmm. It's like a tit for tat
yeah.
aspect to living there.
And what's great about having Brad on is he's like, no, the water's free.
Yeah.
All the water we need falls on the city. We just have to do the right thing with it. Which, you know, it's we have the same problem here, except we also enjoy the coast.
Yeah.
And it really sort of, it's nice to think about, even though, like, I know my own living situation, I think that would be impossible. Like, I rent.
Yeah.
For example, I'm in a sort of courtyard complex with other people, so it's more efficient, probably, than single-family dwelling, considering the complex has multiple apartments kind of thing. Like, yeah. I think it's probably, in some respects, more efficient than other kinds of arrangements. But, you know, the same amount of rain falls on us that falls on any other appropriate amount of square footage kind of thing, and I don't think we've got mulch traps and all that stuff.
Nope.
None of our gray water is doing anything but just washing out to sea, I think, via the Hyperion water treatment plant.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's one of those things where I'm kind of like, wow, god damn it. Like, we could really do a much nicer job for things here. We could use the water we've got.
It's true.
And, like, historically, we know that, like, you know, landscapes like in Arizona sustained lots of people before colonization without any damming of the Colorado River or whatever.
It's true.
So, you know, there are ways of doing all this stuff. I think it would be amazing to try and convince, you know, people in Beverly Hills to make their monitoring their sort of water filtration line that filters the bird poop and stuff out of their water the center of their outdoor hangout area.
Yeah.
Where you go over there and, like, uncork the moist bird poop tube so that, yeah, that way you can water your grapes.
Yeah.
Making that the central focus of your conversation pit.
Giving a whole new sense of terroir to the grapes that you produce.
I mean, that is how terroir is partially. I mean,
yeah,
like,
I'm sure it's a mixture of all kinds of
things. One of the finest German wines I've had is fertilized exclusively with bat guano from the cathedral in town. You know, the ancient cathedral in the center of town kind of thing, which I think most cathedrals generate, like, significant amounts of bat guano.
Okay.
And it's a sought-after fertilizer for...
Yeah.
Local farmers, so
right.
Those reasonings are great.
Wasn't it kind of like the it was somehow like a primary object in Ace Ventura: Pet Detective?
Guano.
Yeah, wasn't like the evil character, I barely remember the film, was trying to, like, secure a large source of guano or something like that?
I don't remember. I remember maybe the actual novel, Dr. No. One of the Ian Fleming James Bond novels also featured guano,
yeah,
in a significant role. I don't remember it being in any of the movies, but
I've always wondered why it's like, you know, we have so many words for feces.
Yeah.
Why bat feces in particular gets its own word, and it's in Spanish.
I think birds also can make guano.
They do?
Yeah.
But we don't. We just say bird shit.
Well, but if it was, like, if you were harvesting seabird guano,
right,
from a remote island in the Pacific.
Oh, like those, I was just in the Central Coast, and those little rock islands you see just off the shore that are just white with...
Yeah, yeah. Guano.
There was a beautiful scene we saw where there was a guano island.
Yeah.
And there was one lone sea lion who'd climbed to the top of this. Kind of preposterous given their morphology.
Yeah.
That he'd gotten up there. She, they had gotten up there and was just howling, like, woo, like really wanted some attention.
And you were like, to what end?
Well, and then, you know, the next day we drove further down the coast to go home and saw, you know, the rookery,
yeah,
where all this elephant seals hang out. So it wasn't a sea lion, it was an elephant seal. And thought that seal was quite far from where they
just
needed
to be.
Lost,
you think?
Perhaps, yeah. Or just practicing. I don't know. Covered in guano.
Delish.
Yeah.
Have you been reading any of these articles this week, just in Los Angeles local news? Have you been reading any of these articles? I think first in the LA Times, and then there was one of those big, expensive multimedia articles in the New York Times about the atmospheric river that's going to destroy California.
Oh, from below? I have not.
Well, no, from above.
Oh, okay.
An atmospheric river is above, rain.
Yeah.
Yeah, so we would get ass loads of rain and more than the dam system could contain kind of thing, and we would be hosed.
So whereas everyone's saying that we're going to be fried to death by the heat, instead we'll be drowned?
This is, I think, the appeal of this lead, right, to newspaper editors. Is they're like, counterintuitive.
Yeah.
Like, they love a contrarian opinion, you know, right. Like, but what if the racism was actually good, you know? And they're like, you go in the opinion section, you know, like.
Yeah, you'll get some clicks.
Joe Biden has saved civilization with the Inflation Reduction Act. And you're like, huh? All right, you know, people are going to want to click on that. So if they're like, bacon dry California, crispy bacon dry California, soon to be
drowned to death
catastrophically. And they always say California, but it's only ever a metonym really for like the area around Sacramento, where like the article sort of elaborates heartily on what's going to happen where.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't sound good. Like, I think it's good that we should prepare for the worst.
Mm-hmm.
Especially when you're building slow moving things like civic infrastructure kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
Like by the time you finish building a large infrastructure project, research will have changed. So you might as well aim for the most extreme scenario because you don't know what's going to happen in the future, and the project's going to persist for hopefully 100 or so years, you know, on its own natural lifetime as a dam or whatever. And it's going to take a decade or something like that to build, usually, you know. So I'm all for, you know, setting our infrastructure targets at the most dire.
So what is your assessment? What do we need more of?
I think we just need we need more of what Brad's doing. First of all, so the water doesn't end up in the river systems when it lands in the cities. I think that's an obvious point. So the water is retained where people use it, and therefore they don't need to fetch the water from elsewhere, and they're not sending what water they do get out into the rivers and waterways to cause damage, to wreak havoc, to fill up the reservoirs necessarily, you know? But at the same time, I think it's also just one of the, like that article about how you think LA is going to, the last round of these, I remember, and I took great satisfaction in it, perversely, was, remember those articles that were like, you think LA is going to be destroyed by an earthquake, but it's probably going to be Portland.
Ooh.
Do you remember those? The New York Times did, this is maybe 4 years ago, but there was like a bunch of articles. Because basically some scientist performs a modeling scenario that indicates that, like, actually the way the fault's going down is it's going to happen in the Pacific Northwest.
Yeah.
And California, for its part, will have more smaller earthquakes, but also California's been preparing vigorously for earthquakes.
Yeah.
Or comparatively vigorously for earthquakes, whereas Portland has not to the same extent. So they're like, you know what's really going to happen is Portland's going to get it. Like, the river that runs the middle of Portland is just going to, like, widen out and go out to sea, basically, is the sort of...
Swallow the city.
Or, like, tear it in half kind of thing.
You know, they should do a slew of like, natural disaster films set in Portland. That would be great.
From your lips to God's ears. You know, we are broadcasting...
Gobbling up fixed gear bikes.
We are broadcasting in Los Angeles, and if what you say is to find a home in Hollywood... we are doing our very best, right? Like, we can't do more than this. Like, we're these ideas are free. They're being put out on the air for free. You just have to drive into Chinatown and park outside the Kaecheng Studios and turn the dial to this station, and you just get these ideas for free. You don't have to come to us. You can't go very far away from the Kaecheng building when you do that, but if you do that, you can hear these ideas absolutely free. We're just giving them away.
It's true.
Kittens. So, you know, I know that just over in probably West Hollywood, embattled filmmaker Roland Emmerich is over there. He likes nothing more than to make a disaster movie, except when he made that movie about Stonewall that everyone hated. So I feel like we're on the cusp of something here, you know? Like, Roland, if you hear this.
Yeah.
Did you see Moonfall, his last?
I saw it on the plane, and I feel like I drifted in and out.
I didn't hear it was very good.
Oh God, yeah. It
the moon's
penetrate.
A robot.
Yeah, but like maybe given to us by a past us or the people that made us or something. There's some kind of like myth of human origin there. There's a puzzle in the middle or something like that.
Roland.
It was stupid.
Roland.
But there were some touching moments where it's like, you know, the kook is right. Yeah. That's always a nice thing. I feel like that's usually to the artist.
Yeah.
They're not portrayed as artists, they're portrayed as kooky scientists. But it's
well,
like,
yeah.
They were right. You should have trusted them all along to do their thing. Recognize them.
Roland, hear what we're saying.
Yeah. Vin Diesel, Portland. Vin Diesel versus The Rock. There's a tidal wave.
The city's being torn in half.
Yeah. We could probably toss in a jet ski sponsorship.
Vin's a mixologist. And
great opening scene of him twisting bottles.
You know,
off his biceps.
You know, he's just running a little bar. He just makes like a good 6-ingredient cocktail.
Yeah, just think like Cocktail, the film meets Armageddon.
Meets your entire oeuvre, Roland.
Yeah.
that for which you are famous. 2012.
Yeah.
Another movie that I had problems with, but you know, I'm glad someone did something with that von Daniken mythos. But you know, so yes, sure. If you want to save the world in a Roland Emmerich film, you need The Rock or Vin Diesel to save humanity somehow, to fly the moon back into its orbit or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to save the world normally, you need to create some sort of Khmer Rouge style forced irrigation program in the cities. We need to change how the entire city of Los Angeles uses water. It's good. It's inspiring to see someone do it for themselves. But we're going to need something on a massive scale if we're going to divert the catastrophe that will befall Southern California when the atmospheric river hits. So
what we really need, moreover, more than all of these future plans, is for more people to adopt the high spirits and attitude of Mr. Lancaster.
Hey.
That is an infectious guy.
You know,
all of our oscillating fans out there have some. They're going to go out this evening and do good, I think.
Or bad, but with joy. You know, I think that's. I don't.
Love it.
I'm not a moralizing person at all. I think there's all kinds of room for all kinds of people.
Okay.
Well, good night, Chinatown.
Good morning.